Welcome back to another edition of Vanguard Radio. I'm your host, J. Richard Jones. In this episode, we continue our series on veterans and some of the challenges that they face. In our last episode, I had the honor of being able to speak with Lieutenant Colonel Chris Linford, retired, about his journey with PTSD. And we're going to place that link to the podcast in this description for anybody who would also like to refer to it. So please be sure to check out Chris's story as well. Today, we have the pleasure of having Captain Phil Ralph, retired, on our show. And he's going to talk about animal-assisted therapy. He's involved in a program that is helping injured and ill veterans and first responders. Phil currently serves as the National Program Director of Wounded Warriors Canada and has served in various capacities with the charity since its founding in 2006, including serving as the chair for 2 years. As program director, he oversees the implementation of a robust and exciting slate of transformative programming that benefits veterans, first responders, and their families. Phil has served for over a quarter century with the Canadian Armed Forces, and he ended that journey in 2016, and now he serves our nation as the regimental chaplain to the 32nd Combat Engineer Regiment, formerly the 2nd Field Engineering Regiment in Toronto. In that capacity, he was exposed to the challenges and the needs of today's veterans. Having seen firsthand the effects of deployment on our veterans, he has a passion to contributing to assisting today's veterans towards wholeness and healing. As the son of a firefighter whose family's service extends well back into the 1800s, he has also witnessed firsthand the challenges that faced first responders and their families as well. Phil, welcome to Vanguard Radio.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be on. And it's somewhat daunting to follow an episode where you interviewed Chris Linford, who's obviously he's our national ambassador and an outstanding individual.
Yes, it was a great interview. I'm sure this one will be great, and you'll certainly continue on with the standard. To begin, maybe you could share some of the highlights with our audience of your career as captain in the armed forces.
Yeah, well, I joined the forces in 1991, and if you remember back in history, that's about the time when the Canadian Forces started the current round of what we'll say more active activity. You know, we just come out of the first Gulf War, and you know, we were then into Somalia, Rwanda, Bosnia, former Yugoslavia, and then on into, once the 2000s came, into the war in Afghanistan. So my career spanned that time in the Canadian Forces, and it was my privilege to serve as a regimental chaplain for 32 Combat Engineer Regiment and interact with the outstanding men and women of the Canadian Forces.
That's certainly a lot of history. In your current role as Director of Health Services at Wounded Warriors Canada, what does that involve? Can we dig a little deeper into that?
Yeah, so Wounded Warriors Canada has evolved over the years. I mean, having been founded in 2006 as a direct result of a member of my regiment being blown up by a roadside bomb in Afghanistan by a bicycle-borne suicide bomber, September 18th, 2006, and then seeing the need and some of the lack of services and support, the charity was founded to fill gaps. And in the early years, that meant bringing comfort items to those who were recovering in hospital in Langstuhl, Germany. And then as conflict wore down in Afghanistan and as the members of the charity began to meet and talk to each other, you know, the charity had been set up to fill gaps. And so what were the gaps? And by then, people like myself and others were seeing, obviously, that the need was in the area of mental health. During my career in the Canadian Forces, I, like a number of my colleagues and other chaplains, one of the roles that falls to chaplains in the Canadian Armed Forces is when there is a death overseas or a serious injury where the soldier or sailor or air person could not talk for themselves. It's the chaplain's duty along now with a senior officer to go to the homes of the families of the fallen and seriously wounded and inform the family of what has happened with their loved one. And so I did that a number of times in my service, as did chaplains throughout the country. It was a difficult task, but one that, you know, those families deserve to have it done professionally and to be cared for. And it became obvious to myself and to everyone who was doing those roles that, you know, it was one thing to go to a door and talk to a family about the fact that their loved one had had been killed in combat as a result of interaction with the enemy. And that's something that people who are in the Canadian Armed Forces know is a, you know, at least a possibility. That's one thing, but it's quite another thing to try to come to a door and explain that sadly an individual has come home from the field of conflict and hasn't been able to deal with some of the issues that they encountered when they were overseas, and sadly has taken his or her life. And, you know, the statistics now are that, you know, we've probably lost more veterans to suicide than we have to the actual combat in Afghanistan, and that's just simply unacceptable.
Yes, I agree. And that is a very tough job, but it's also certainly very necessary and part of the respect and process that I think all of the veterans deserve. So now you're involved in the Wounded Warriors Animal Assisted Therapy Program. Can you tell us a little more about it and how it's helping veterans and first responders?
Yeah, so our animal assisted therapy is just one of our wide range of programs that we have under the umbrella of Wounded Warriors Canada Health Services. It was actually one of the first programs when we made the switch to mental health that we started to get involved in 2012. We began to see areas where, you know, there were some TV shows, some documentaries, a few other things that highlighted how animal-assisted therapy was helping in other areas and was beginning to help veterans both south of the border and here in Canada. So we started to explore what that would look like, made some investments, learned a lot of lessons about what worked and what did not work. I remember a conversation back in 2013 when we first got involved in this, with the senior officials in the Department of National Defense, in the Surgeon General's office, saying that there wasn't enough evidence and this was something that they could not support. And that's a very different story today. Those same officials are looking to the leadership that Wounded Warriors Canada is offering in this area. So obviously, animal-assisted therapy, we have a couples-based program that's an equine program that deals with communication, but our most widely known and public program is our PTSD service dog program. Way back in 2014, we met with the Veterans Affairs Minister, his staff, and a whole bunch of others, and we saw that the landscape for service dogs was somewhat bumpy because there were at that time, no regulations in Canada for psychiatric service dogs as far as public access and standards for training, etc. Something that we thought, if you're going to move forward in this area, that there really needs to be, because if we're going to have service dogs, we need to have service dogs that are trained to the task that they need to do to assist veterans in their journey and in their healing. So out of that, the Department of Veterans Affairs did two things. It commissioned a study on service dogs out of Laval University. That results of that study were published a couple of years ago and said that service dogs indeed do exactly when they're properly trained, what they're intended to do in assisting veterans with lowering anxiety and increasing their quality of life and confidence. But then the standards piece, we began to sit on a board that was established in Ottawa. Sadly, the quest for national standards fell apart a couple of years ago. But we looked at all the work that had been done, and we knew where the standards had to go. And we looked at what some of the provinces had done. And in particular, the province of British Columbia had done some extensive work and had established an absolutely outstanding standard for both training and for public access. So we took those lessons from both the CGSB board that we sat on and the standards from the province of British Columbia. And we then established the Wounded Warriors Canada PTSD service dog standards. The reason we did this was the public saw how effective these dogs were, but there's no reason for the public to really get into and understand all the facets that go into training and standards and those kinds of things. So what we needed to do was to establish a framework where there was a trusted place, and we decided to take the leadership in that area to publish standards. They're found on our website. We also published prescriber guidelines because many clinicians thought that service dogs may be useful, but really didn't, you know, because it wasn't always part of their training, really didn't know exactly what a service dog did and when it would be indicated. So we established a prescriber's guidelines with all the literature and with all the clinical diagnosis of mental health injuries, a questionnaire that the clinician can sit down with his or her client, be they a veteran or a first responder, and go through that questionnaire and determine whether or not that person would benefit just from a really well-trained companion dog, a great pet, or whether they needed to go and have a service dog that could meet their needs. The next thing that we had to do was find out who in the country was producing such dogs, what trainers. So we formed a national network of service dog providers that meet our standards, and we're proud to say that this year we'll train and pair approximately 45 service dogs to veterans and first responders throughout the country, and we have another 80 to 100 that are in some way or form part of the process leading up to the eventual pairing of a service dog with that individual.
Those are fantastic statistics. What I see from or hear from what you're saying is that you've basically put this program on the map. You've shown the results. You've built the infrastructure around it and given it all of the checkpoints so that somebody can implement this program in a more timely manner. Would that be a good way to look at it?
Yeah, and we wanted a trusted place where both donors and those receiving the dogs could feel comfortable. The dogs that come out of our program, you'll begin to see them right across the country. You're seeing them now. They have a distinctive red vest with the Wounded Warriors Canada supported service dog crest on them. It doesn't matter which provider they come through, and then the actual school that we've certified to provide our dogs and partnered with. We have great partners. One of the big challenges in the service dog world was to have some stability and some continuity. So with our fundraising and with the support of Canadians, we have entered into 3-year memorandums of understanding with these schools that get reviewed and renewed every year, so that they know that there's stable funding. What had been happening with even the best schools was they were really limited in their financial resources. So they would only train a couple dogs and then they have to start again and start again. So there was never any capacity there because they could only train to the level of the funding that they had, because it takes anywhere between $15,000 and $25,000 to adequately train a service dog properly. And the number now is averaging somewhere around $15,000 because of the capacity that we've built in the system. We're continuing to vet, and in the coming months and years, we hope to approve more of these service dog trainers across the country, so that we can increase capacity. Obviously, with the number of dogs, there's a lot of factors involved that people, need to be aware of. It takes up to 2 years The first 18 months of that dog's life is a lot of, I guess the best way to train, to explain it to a layman is they become the best trained pet that you'd ever have in those first 18 months, etc. And then the next little while is when they get paired with a veteran or a first responder that needs one. And this program has garnered some excellent partnerships. The Royal Canadian Legion Ontario Command has partnered with us to provide, and they provided $300,000 this year to make sure that this program was continuously sustainable, because they saw the work that we put in, the infrastructure, and that this was a trusted brand, and they partnered with us. And then the Wellness Fund of the Canadian Forces that has partnered with us for $100,000 for the next 5 years to increase our capacity as well. So, and then we have tremendous support from coast to coast, right across the country, that enables us to do not only our service dog work, but indeed all of our programs.
You know, that's fantastic news. And one of the reasons we're doing this series is to get the word out, first of all, about what Wounded Warriors Canada does overall, but also the specific programs. And this is one of them that we really want to work on promoting within industry and to consumers who probably would really like to support and know more about this. Vanguard has an active program in place where we've had the privilege to partner with Wounded Warriors Canada to spread this news about what's going on and what's being done. And we're quite proud to say that we're also supporting Wounded Warriors Canada financially through our subscription program. For our listenership and readership, for each subscription to Vanguard Magazine, we are donating a portion of it to Wounded Warriors so that veterans and first responders and their families can benefit from programs like the Animal Assisted Therapy Program. And we're quite pleased to do that. And I encourage our readers and listenership to subscribe individually. And as well, there are bulk subscription rates available. Phil, if I could ask you, what is one takeaway that you would like to leave our listeners with as to what Wounded Warriors is all about and why it's important to support such a cause?
Well, first of all, I mean, I want to thank Vanguard for their partnership, because we say, as we sometimes say, and it's true, partnerships make programs possible. Without partners like you and our other partners right across the country and individual Canadians, none of this is possible. Wounded Warriors Canada made the tremendous decision a couple of years ago to be an organization that actually became a mental health service provider. That our programs are all in-house. We are proud to say that 82% or more of every single donor dollar goes directly to programs that change and save lives. And none of it would have been possible without the tremendous support and faith of people like Vanguard and other companies and individuals right across the country.
Those are great statistics, and I'm certainly going to pass on your note of thanks to publisher, editor-in-chief Terry Pavlik. She is the one who had the vision for this and has had the opportunity to work closely with the Wounded Warriors Canada team. If you would like to subscribe or support this program through Vanguard Magazine, you can do so by going to vanguardcanada.com/subscription. If you do that, you're going to be getting a high-quality bi-monthly magazine that features the latest trends and topics and discussions, as well as interviews like this. And it's covering the Canadian security and defense industry in Canada, and you also have an opportunity to really support a great cause. We've had the opportunity to speak with Captain Phil Ralph this morning, and he serves as the National Program Director of Wounded Warriors Canada. And I really want to thank you for coming on to our show this morning.
Oh, it was my pleasure, and anytime.